Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, everybody, welcome to the podcast. Gideon, how's it going this week, man?
It's going good, dude. What is it? I got like 2 days left on the Fortnite Battle Pass. I finished the main Battle Pass,
nice,
you know?
Nice, nice.
So it calms down the shakes, you know? I'm good. Till the new season.
and then you fight the final boss, Emperor Fortnite himself, right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Mr. Emperor Fortnite.
Mr. William T. Fortnite.
Yeah. I gotta say, it's so surreal. It's like a weird fever dream. I was playing, and I was Godzilla, and I had, like, Jordans on, and I was doing, like, the Numa Numa dance. I was like, what the fuck am I playing right now? What Sweet. Is it? But yeah, I've just been chilling other than that, you know. I watched Greyhound, which is a Apple TV movie. I watched that with my dad.
Okay, cool. What was that about?
It's, like, about some... It's, like, 1942... And these boats that like help escort a bunch of supplies like to the Allies. And basically there's like an area of the ocean that's like they don't have any air cover and they're fighting like submarines and shit.
I see. Cool.
It was fun. I'd recommend it. Yeah. Tom Hanks. You know. Okay. It was better than I expected.
Wikipedia mentions effective use of a 90-minute runtime.
Yeah.
Like it just
It gets right into it. It's not like boring. So very dad.
All right. Well, cool. Yeah. Some movies are just dad movies. Top 10 dad movies. We'll do that podcast sometime. Yeah. Ford versus Ferrari, number one. Okay. Laura, how's it going this week?
Oh, it's going good. The temperature like rose from negative freezing into warm and rainy. So now I'm walking dogs.
How warm is it in Vancouver?
It's about like 5-10 degrees, so it's like pre-spring. it wants to be spring,
right? We are anticipating it getting up to 45 degrees by next Monday, which might necessitate me going out on a bike ride. We'll see. We'll test it out. We'll see how things are going. But yeah, the last couple days here, it's been like actual negative 10, negative 15, and then the wind chill, you know, far below that. And it's so dry in the house right now that every time I try to touch one of my animals, they recoil because they know they're going to get shocked.
Yep.
So
why does father hurt us?
Unlimited power. And last but not least, Neil, how's it going?
Oh, you know, just chugging along. Don't have too much to report.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you is it pretty cold there?
Temps are actually supposed to drop tonight. I'm hoping that it will snow so that I don't have to go into work tomorrow.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, yep. Snow day.
Oh, by the way, Sam, I got your invitation.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. Oh, I didn't have anything to do with them. Grace did them. So you're welcome. Yes, they are beautiful. Hey, Grace. Thank you. I was just in charge of collecting addresses like Boba Fett collects like Wookiee braids or what is does Boba Fett collect Wookiee braids? Is that what he's doing?
I don't know.
Boba Fett collects something, right?
I don't know.
Seen the scalps of his enemies, but that's predators, right?
Yeah, I was just thinking like predators. I think like skulls and their spines and shit.
Right, yeah.
I don't know about
Vader has to warn him off on no disintegrations.
No disintegrations. That's awesome. Love that indirect storytelling. What did he disintegrate that one time that he wasn't supposed to? You know, that's such a good question. Well, I guess I haven't been really up to too much. I've been home most of the week. I had a couple work from home days, and then like my this Monday was President's Day, which is a bank holiday, so nobody went to the office, so I just worked from here. So that was fine. But I'm going to try to go in tomorrow because I have, I try to like save up all my like actual design projects for days I'm in the office, so people see me doing stuff while I'm in there. So tomorrow is going to be my day to actually get stuff done. Speaking of getting stuff done, I finally got through disc one of Final Fantasy VII Original on the CRT on original hardware.
Oh yeah!
Finally got through disc one, so I'm through the I'm through the tutorial, as it were. Hmm. So I'm happy to have that done. That was really awesome.
Too many 90s appropriate snacks for this.
Yeah, I was down in Zima's and in Twizzlers.
Dang. Yeah.
Drink some Orbitz.
Yeah, some Orbitz, and then I was drinking my own salty tears when Aerith was dead. I was like, no, just kidding. I'm more of a Tifa guy. Neil knows what I'm talking about. All right. Well, this week we are here to talk about the 2007 Michael Benjamin Bay, as Wikipedia describes him.
Nice.
His 2007 Transformers movie. Normally we try to bring a certain level of, like criterion, kind of intellectual film discussion to the podcast. So Neil thought that bringing Transformers would just add to that kind of vibe. So Neil, why don't you tell us why you brought Transformers?
Well, part of it was from watching Speed Racer. I looked at the year, and Speed Racer came out in 2008, and I was like, "What year did Transformers come out?" And it came out in 2007. And like I mentioned in Speed Racer, a lot of it is like art design, and that's going to sort of influence what your CG looks like. But my memory was that, man, Transformers looked freaking great, and this looks like dog poo. And so I wanted to like compare it and just kind of see like how solid my memory was on that. And I feel like I made you guys watch a couple of like artsy fartsy films the past few times, so I thought I'd give us a chance to watch some action schlock.
And Neil wanted to punish us with a 3-hour movie.
It's not a 3-hour movie.
224.
Laura's counting in Canadian minutes.
Yeah.
There we go.
Inflation's a bitch. I had actually never seen this movie before. Neil, you had seen this movie before?
Yeah. So I remember watching it when it came out. And the other thing I sort of wanted to challenge was, number one, Michael Bay is kind of like the punchline to a lot of jokes about like directors these days, but this was my memory going in, was that I remember Transformers 1 being like exactly what I paid my ticket price for. I was like, yes, this is what I wanted. And then Transformers 2 was like a pretty significant step down, but maybe a couple of like fond memories in there. And then Transformers 3 was, I think I started writing my own Plinkett-esque review of like Transformers 3 is the worst movie ever made. And then I didn't watch any of the, I think it's like Age of Extinction and The Last Knight. And then I think
Bumblebee.
Like a Bumblebee, and there might've been.
I didn't realize there's like 9 of them now. Like they just kept on making movies.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Michael Bay, I think, stopped with, whichever one was the fifth. He might still be a producer, but he's not the director anymore. But I just remember that like that trilogy just being a series of steps down and then like right into the sewer. So I kind of wanted to see like what my perceptions were now that I've seen more film and expanded on some stuff. And then again, like kind of to see if Michael Bay deserves some rehabilitation. Because, like, there are movies that he's been involved with that are, like, pretty well respected, and those come from, like, earlier in his career. Armageddon, The Rock, Neither of which I've seen.
I was going to actually point out that The Rock and Armageddon are both in the Criterion Collection, so he's not. It's not exclusively this Venn diagram where it's like Michael Bay movies and Criterion.
Yeah, there's a funny story that Xander told me where apparently at one point Michael Bay had a bunch of like film execs and like people in the industry over for a party, and he's got like a private theater in his house, and he's like, "Hey guys, let's watch this." I think it's Ridley Scott directed The Duelists, which I think is like a very well received, again, kind of artsy movie. And after about like 20 minutes, Michael Bay just like shut it off and said, like, "Guys, I'm sorry. If I'd known it was this boring, I wouldn't have made you watch it." So
that's awesome.
At some point, he's we'll probably watch The Duelist. But like just going through Michael Bay's IMDb page, he's had such a strange career because he was the guy behind the Got Milk ad.
Whoa, really?
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
And he got his start directing music videos, a couple of like really good ones, like The Meatloaf, I'd Do Anything for Love, a lot of, like, you know, for their time, like very popular bands and artists. And then somehow he jumped that into Bad Boys, and then The Rock, and then Armageddon, Pearl Harbor, another music video, Bad Boys 2, and then another music video, and then pretty much into Transformers.
Wow.
So, you know, like, you got to give him respect just for being, like, tenacious and working your way up in the industry.
You know, I kind of respect his, like, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page under critical reception, and some of these really made me laugh. It's like Michael Bay's films have been criticized for overly broad and sophomoric humor, excessive product placement, and extreme patriotism.
One other thing that I did see is that he's not directing it, but last year a movie called Apartment 7A came out, which he produced, which is a prequel to Rosemary's Baby, focused on that woman who Rosemary meets and then we think commits suicide, but it's her story leading up to that point.
Interesting.
So,
that's
fun.
Cool.
Little
Neil, you had or sorry, Gideon, you'd seen this movie before?
Yeah. Before I jump into that, I did want to speak. Michael Bay's most recent movie is a movie called Ambulance from 2022. I haven't seen it, but I have heard pretty good things. So I wonder kind of where he's at, I guess, in our modern day and age with that movie being his most recent.
This is Michael Bay. The last thing I remember Michael Bay, like me seeing Michael Bay do in the public sector, was he was asked to speak for like a TED Talk or something, and he got on stage and his microphone didn't work and he just walked off and then just left. and then like they interviewed him later, they're like, what happened? He was just like, I got angry and I freaked out and I just left. I'm 99% sure that was Michael Bay. I'll look it up and I'll link you guys, but it's so awkward. He just walks on and the teleprompter isn't working or something. He's just like, all right, see ya, and he just walks off and they're like, no, because he was like the whole event. Or anyway, Gideon, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, you're good.
You've seen this before, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is probably for my life one of the most nostalgic movies, because it was like, it released when I was 13. Mm-hmm. I had BioShock and Halo 3 at home. I saw this in a drive-in theater, and it was a double feature with a Die Hard movie with Justin Long. I forget what it's called. I'll have to look it up. But even that like screening, I like vividly remember. And I got like, I had like watched not the OG Transformers, but like Armada and Energon and a little bit like Beast Wars and shit. And I had some of the toys with that, but I got like really into the toys like when this movie came out. And I haven't seen it like in full since I was like, I don't know, 15 or something. But it, yeah, I definitely have a lot of familiarity and history with this movie. Like seeing it on TV or a friend's house or just catching clips or rewatching clips like the Bone Crusher fight online a lot and stuff like that.
You know, I think last week we talked about a little bit about Speed Racer with we don't think of particular eras as having a visual look to them until, like, when we're living through them, we don't think, like, wow, everything is gritty and grainy and green and brown, right? But, like, this movie just visually screams 2007, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, all over the place. Every video game at this time looked like this movie. A lot of action movies looked like this. Every war movie. All the footage out of Iraq. Yeah. And it was just so of its era. So I totally feel you on the nostalgia.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, did this movie come out before or after the, like, 2007 housing crisis?
Before, because that was 2008, 2009.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And this came out July 3rd, 2007, yeah.
Badass.
Hell yeah.
How about you, Laura? Had you seen this movie before? Was this banned in Canada? What was the
No, I actually saw this. It's funny how Gideon says, like, oh, this is so nostalgic, because I experienced that nostalgia as someone else's nostalgia. So I watched this movie, like, I think it was like opening night when it first came out, because one of my friends was dating a guy who was absolutely obsessed with Transformers. So he dragged the whole friend group to this, and I sat beside him, and then his girlfriend was like on the other side of him, and we were both looking over him, watching him cry at Transformers through various moments. And I will never, like, I'm not going to shame Darcy for that, because, like, Transformers, like, he has a Transformers tattoo, he has one of those, like, stickers on his car, like, he's a lifer, and it's obviously very meaningful for him, like, you know, the way Lord of the Rings is some people's lifestyle, that's him with Transformers, but I'm just looking across Darcy to Megan, I'm like, hon, you're seeing this shit, right? And she's just nodding, like, uh-huh, just let him be.
You know... So your story is a good segue into a story I have about this movie. Well, about Transformers in general. So when I first moved to St. Cloud, I didn't know anybody. My first friend here, who was actually my emergency contact until I met Grace, was the first. It was the guy who trained me in at the hospital, Steve Bertram. Steve is in a wheelchair and has been since he was a kid. He has spina bifida, you know, can't walk, right? Uh-huh. So, but he was the perfect age for Transformers. So he was like a Transformers mega fan and outfitted his wheelchair with like a bunch of Transformers swag, which was, okay, I think, totally awesome. And the story he tells me is that he was like 10 when the animated Transformers movie came to theaters, and he saw it in the theater and he bawled his eyes out when Optimus Prime died.
That's funny.
So that's like one of my favorite Steve stories, is that, like, the only movie he's ever cried in was Transformers the movie, which is awesome. So I would say, for me personally, like, I knew of this movie's existence. I heard really good things about it when it came out. I remember being, like, around other kids that summer and then being like, oh, Transformers is totally awesome, you gotta go see it. But I just never did. And then, you know, like, there was other stuff I wanted to see on DVD, and my parents wouldn't have been into Transformers, so we never rented it, never saw it. I really didn't know anything about it other than it's the movie that, I mean, obviously I know vaguely that it's about the Transformers that are in the cartoon. And Shia LaBeouf is in it, and Megan Fox it was the movie that basically launched her career. What I was not expecting was the outstanding supporting cast. Namely, John Voight, who, you know, for all intents and purposes, is maybe a little crazy now, but is a great actor. Neil and I, of course, broke our teeth on Deliverance and watching John Voight, which is a great movie. I was extremely excited to watch John Turturro show up. I love John Turturro; he's one of my favorite actors. Mm-hmm. I had no idea he was in this movie. When he showed up, I was like, yes, let's go. So watching John Turturro show up was totally awesome. But I am intimately familiar with other Michael Bay movies. I think The Rock is one of the greatest action movies of all time. And I have not seen Armageddon, but everybody says that Armageddon is also totally the shit. So
it has a legendary Criterion commentary track that is just like
Armageddon.
Mm-hmm. Just like,
why is it legendary?
It's like Ben Affleck just kind of like talking shit about the movie and the process, and just like how he was like arguing and just like lots of infighting stuff. It's like really funny from the little clips I listened to.
That sounds awesome. Dude. God, Ben Affleck sounds like such a douchebag every time I hear anything about that guy.
Dude, it's so funny, man. It's so funny.
Anyway, so let's give a little bit of a synopsis here. So basically,
you got this kid.
Tell us about the Allspark, Gideon, because I don't remember. I wasn't listening during that.
That's okay. It's just like some cube. That's fine. It's literally just a cube.
It
gives life or some shit, and it's like from Cybertron. I don't really remember, to be honest. It doesn't matter.
Okay, so they established that there's an important MacGuffin that we protect. So
yeah,
flash forward. It's the mid-2000s. Shia LaBeouf needs a car. He's got not a lot of money. They go to get a car from the used car dealership, and lo and behold, it's Bumblebee, the Transformer in disguise, and he doesn't know it, and he thinks the car is possessed or whatever. It turns out the Autobots are on Earth because they have tracked the Allspark to Earth, and the secret to finding out where it is or activating it is hidden in a pair of glasses that belonged to Shia LaBeouf's grandfather, who was like a great grandfather who was like an Arctic explorer who accidentally uncovered the first Megatron, but one of the Decepticons. Whatever, it doesn't matter. The whole movie is just nonsensical, and I mean that in the best possible way.
Yeah.
The FBI gets involved. The government gets involved. The Men in Black get involved, basically. And events transpire. Whatever leads us to the climax where Prime and Megatron are fighting in downtown L. That's the plot of this movie. Like, let's just get to the point where those two are kicking ass. Okay, we're going to take a short break from the synopsis. Everybody name their favorite Transformer. Gideon, you go first.
Shit, man. In this movie or just in general? Like, in general? Shit.
Yeah, whatever.
I like Starscream. He's a punk-ass bitch. He's always trying to be king of the Decepticons, but he's a bitch. And Megatron always whoops his ass. It's like, this is why you're a little bitch, Starscream. Because I'm Megatron, and you're a little fucking shit all the time. You don't know what the fuck you're doing. And you think you're hot shit, but you're a dumbass.
I was also going to say Starscream because he has the coolest voice in the
game. Yeah. Dude,
voice is totally sick.
Neil, what a badass name, dude. Starscream.
Great name. Starscream is a great name.
Damn.
Be a good 80s metal, like a power metal band.
Oh, yeah.
So I grew up with Transformers Beast Wars.
Hell yeah.
So,
is it Rat Trap?
No, Rat Trap is also a punk-ass bitch most of the time.
He is.
Guys, it's Rhinox. He's back.
Rhinox is up there. Tarantulas, what? Probably like began my descent into rooting for the bad guy, but for me, I think it's sort of like a tie of Silverbolt and Black Arachnia. I think they kind of formatted my thoughts on like what like romantic relationships were supposed to be, and Silverbolt is like a wolf hawk hybrid.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's totally cool. So
Laura, who's your favorite Transformer?
I'm not a lifer when it comes to Transformers. I just sort of know vaguely of them. For this movie, I kind of just gotta say Soundwave because he moves the plot forward and he's a little stinker.
Is Soundwave?
He's the little like creepy little robot who's always doing shit with the plot. So he's like, and he crawls out of
there. I never realized that was Soundwave.
I don't think that was Soundwave.
Or maybe not. I don't know. He was a boombox at some point.
That thing was.
And it was also a cell phone.
Right. He was like a mini con for Barricade or some shit. I don't know. I don't know who the hell he was, but I know who
you're talking about. Know what was really nostalgic about this movie? Well, not only was like there was a lot of Hummers in the background of this movie, but the one of the Autobots turns into a Pontiac, which is a Chevy, yeah. Or it's a GM brand that doesn't even exist anymore. I forgot about Pontiac.
That's what I was wondering. I was like, aren't they gone?
Yeah, but yeah, Pontiac doesn't exist anymore. When I was 8 years old, I thought Pontiacs were the coolest car for some reason. I don't know why I thought. Gideon, maybe you can relate to me on this one, but like, this is such a Muscatine-ism. I only like really realized once I got to the. When you live in Muscatine, right? You're growing up there. You think the Corvette is the coolest car ever. Right, yeah, but like, you move to like a bigger city, and there are like people with like actually nice, like actually expensive cars, and you realize you're like, oh, a Corvette is like
nothing.
Like a Corvette is like when you're like middle class, you think a Corvette is really awesome, and then like rich people think a Corvette is like a trashy, Chevy like car. Basically, they think it's like, yeah. I never knew that. I always thought Corvettes were like, I see Dr. Schlichter driving around in his Corvette, and I was like, that guy's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Cool. I didn't know that they were dumb. I thought that was a cool car.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention with cars and like this movie and even Muscatine, there's someone around town that has like a Camaro that's yellow, like Bumblebee, and their license plate says Bumblebee. So it's just so interesting, like the staying power. Or that's like how iconic Bumblebee became as just like a character. Yeah.
You know, so Tom Porter lives in Chicago, right? You know that? So he was living there when Transformers, one of the Transformers movies, was being filmed there, and he saw Optimus Prime going down the street.
Dude, that's awesome.
Like the prop car that they were using to like they had like two blocks like walled off or whatever, but you could, if you were like up in one of your buildings, you'd see like Optimus Prime like rolling down the street and shooting it. Yeah, I would probably shit my pants. Anyway, so let's go around and just give high-level impressions of Michael Bay's Transformers. Does anybody in particular want to start? Does anybody just, like, fucking goo-goo gaga over this movie and want to enlighten us to how you feel?
So, go ahead, Laura.
I was just going to say, like, was this the very beginning of movies being graded like teal and orange, like everything in the background is teal and everyone's skin is orange? Because I noticed like they were very, very orange.
Could have been the start of like a wave.
And that goes back to what Sam was saying about like this movie being very like early mid-2000s. Just like that, the idea that people's skin tone, especially because I know that, again, there's a lot of Middle Eastern movies and they have to be color graded yellow and orange, but and then that just rubbed off on cinema as a whole. That's like everyone's skin should just be really tan and really orange, although Megan Fox somehow looks great.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could do almost anything to Megan Fox and she was still totally awesome, so it's no surprise there. I think that is more of a Michael Bay-ism. I mean, his movies from the 90s kind of look like this too. They have a very sharp look to visually to the movie, and they like the sharpness of your TV has been cranked up. Everything's sweaty, everything's teal, everything's gray. They just have a very particular, the Rock looks very similar visually to Transformers, so that's just a Michael Bayism.
And then my other question,
I didn't think it looked bad. I just thought it looked very like, especially in comparison to Speed Racer, it looked very flat. You know, and sometimes there's like a lot of shit going on at once, and it's a little bit of a blur. There's like a lot of motion blur, like the same color, and everything just kind of runs together. But yeah, it definitely has a look to it. But anyway, go on, Laura.
The other thing I was going to say is, like, going back to that thing about the housing crash, is like, so is he supposed to be like middle class? Because like, the house he lives in is enormous and nice.
Yeah.
And in Los Angeles.
California? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, your parents are rich, dude.
Yeah. Again, I think that really, to me, that is a part of the aesthetic of this movie is like, oh, yeah, it's 2007. The economy hadn't crashed yet. We're making a movie, the stupidest movie ever. Stupidest plot with the biggest budget and the biggest cars and the biggest explosions. and everybody's in a nice house, and that guy running down the street, Xbox. I mean, it was just like, this movie just like screams like American exceptionalism, you know, or it's trying to like portray that. I'm not saying that that is like valid or invalid, or I'm not making a commentary on that, but like this movie is so like the height of an empire at a particular point in history.
Oh yeah,
where they portray, you're right, peak oil. They, that's a good way of putting it. They portray Shia LaBeouf as being like almost not comically poor, but comically like you can only have the shittiest car in the lot. But then he goes home and they have like a $2 million home in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
They do comment, like the mom keeps commenting like, gosh, you're so cheap, to the, yeah, to the dad.
Well, but, and then, or go ahead.
The thought that I came up with during this was, this is like the most Michael Bay trademarked movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of the problem that I had with like Transformers 2 and 3 is that like a lot of like the I think complaints that we're going to come up with just get worse as those two movies come along. Mm-hmm. But this is like just very, very, like this is the movie that all those punchlines were made about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's still like, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like it's like you can, he's just about to jump off the cliff of just totally selling out. And I think he probably did, considering the amount of product placement in this movie, but like,
I mean, there's a reason we're not ready to blame Gangbusters.
Yeah.
Yeah, he like leans into it, I feel like. Like, I don't know, it's so campy and the plot is so nonsensical. But like you said, like, about you got what you paid for with your ticket price, like, you're there for just big ass robots blowing shit up for two and a half hours.
Well,
and go ahead.
No, finish with that. But I mean,
for the most part, you get that. It's just a very entertaining movie. It almost feels like a proto, like, it feels like a poster child summer blockbuster movie that is like extremely patriotic and having it release on July 3rd. And almost like a proto, like, Marvel movie, because Iron Man was like right around the corner, like next year.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of interesting with like the heavy CGI and stuff like that. But yeah, go ahead, Neil.
So what I was going to say is that like this movie is especially for a Michael Bay movie, it's like it's almost coy about the Transformers. I took some timestamps and we don't see like Bumblebee like up close transformed until 45 minutes into the movie.
Yeah,
man. We don't see Megatron Optimus until like the last fifth of the movie. He's mm-hmm. like yeah. not in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see Optimus Prime until about an hour 15.
Yeah.
Like we get his voiceover at the beginning mm-hmm. and then no Optimus Prime for an hour. And he's like, he is the cover of the movie, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Well, even to comment on that, before we watched this, we watched on Paramount Plus and we watched the trailer that it had, and it brought back so many memories of when I feel like I first saw it. And it's like the rover on Mars or whatever, and you see the robot like grab the camera, and then it's like, this was our only warning. So it's a very like ambiguous, kind of mysterious, like what the hell is happening? And then it ends with like the title transforming and says Transformers. So I don't know. It's just, it is interesting how he's like waiting almost like to show his hand to be like, oh, you ain't seen nothing yet kind of thing. Cause this felt like a huge moment for CGI in general. I feel like this movie.
You know, it's funny you guys bring that up because one of the things I was going to say about my personal experience watching this movie is that I actually like the first half a lot more than the second half. Like when it's essentially a Terminator movie, right? And there's like all this crazy AI stuff going on, and there's like these robots, but we're like, the government isn't like really sure about what's going on. And it, that scene where the little fucker, the little transformy guy is
not Scorpionock, the boombox guy.
The boombox guy, yeah, is on Air Force One. I was like riveted. It was like the best scene. That's like my favorite scene of the whole. Once it got to the actual, you know, like let's say last 45 minutes, I was like more checked out. I was like, you know, I'm enjoying this. I'm eating popcorn and Dr. Pepper, but you know, all the, at that point, all the plot and character development is pretty much over. So I don't know. I thought the first hour or so of this movie was like really, really good though. Definitely my favorite bit.
Yeah. I like, I feel like it has a lot of great scenes throughout this movie, and a lot of the cast is really entertaining. Like, I really like spending time with, like, the military guys and just seeing what they were doing. And, like, dude, the fucking opening scene, I think one of the opening scenes with Blackout, the helicopter that just, like, EMP nukes the place. He's fucking blowing shit up. He's dropping Scorpionock to fuck with them. That was awesome. Like, seeing that in the drive-in when I was 13 and I was playing Bioshock and Halo 3 on the weekend, holy shit, that was awesome. That was drinking Game Fuel. Yeah. And Master Chief on the bottle. Dude, it was insane. I don't know. I'm just like kind of in awe of some of these things with this movie. I did check real quick. The boombox transformer is called Frenzy. Apparently.
Frenzy, okay.
I don't know why that's interesting. They said that, but
where else do we want to go with this? What else do we want to talk about, guys?
I think we could talk about the humor. I feel like the Witwicky family as a whole is like a riot, especially the dad.
The scene with
the dad going to get the car, he drives by the Porsche dealership, and he's like, "Oh my god, I'm gonna get it." He's like, "No, you're not getting it." And he gets him such a piece of shit, like when it drives away with all the smoke and just like all they're like digging up the yard or whatever.
Yeah.
He's so funny, and just like him like running under the table thinking it's an earthquake, and he still has his like wine glass and he like didn't bring his wife over.
Yeah. Dude, what about when he catches like Shia LaBeouf with Megan Fox in his room and he gives him like the little fist bump? I thought that was super funny.
I rewound that part. Melissa's like, he gave him a fist bump, dude. Like, oh.
Even the cringe humor with the mom, like, were you like masturbating? And he's Mom, don't. You're having a special time. It's okay.
Yeah, he's like, no, that's the thing for a father. To be honest, that was really funny. I was really into the like the nervous Shia LaBeouf energy for the first little bit of the movie, and then by the second half of the movie I was a little bit over it. That was very grating and very tiring for a shorter movie it would have been fine, right? But it was just like it's very
exhausting.
He did put
his all into the movie, like you can tell he's acting his little heart out, but like
he did.
There's a lot of energy going on there.
He has like he does one thing and he does that well, but again, you know, it was like I was starting to get annoyed by Shia LaBeouf. But and
interesting.
To be fair, by the second half of the movie, he shit.
You kind of cut out by the second half of the movie. What?
Yeah, I was just saying that like by the second half of the movie, like running from stuff, so he's really not talking that much.
Yeah,
but he has there's a little bit of a problem with him just being like no, like all
I loved his frenetic energy that he brings to the movie. I feel like he was a really good lead and he plays off the other characters pretty well. Even early on when he's like with his weird friend that's climbing the tree and he's talking about how he was like doing research for that book and he's like, "Oh yeah, it's about brain damage in football. It's got mazes in it and coloring pages." I was like, that shit still like makes me laugh. That was really good.
This is going to be a weird cultural touchstone, but I feel that it's correct. Did anybody think watching this movie nostalgically in a positive way necessarily, but about the brand Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah, with the bully guy. I was like, damn, he just like walked out of Abercrombie and he like smells like patchouli and stuff. Like, or teak wood. Yeah.
I guess I didn't think about that.
I thought about it, and I thought about all the trouble that CEO got into when they started leaking what they were saying in their like corporate meetings about their brand, right? Which was things that everybody already knew that the brand was doing, right? Just colloquially,
just
we all understood.
Say that.
But you just can't say it. You can't say that you fat kids or ugly kids wearing your clothes. But like, I mean, we were all, Neil and Gideon and I were in high school at the peak of that brand's existence, right? Or at least middle school and high school. And I just remember, like, watching this movie, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a brand that used to exist and really mean something. I'm sure it's around in some way, but it surely is not as relevant.
Well, it also follows the, there's a saying about, like, the length of women's skirts in the economy, that like short skirts mean the economy is great and like long skirts means it's tanking. And so guess what? Right now, long skirts are in. And when Megan Fox is there, it's like, oh yeah, economy is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
So I want to bring something up here about this is a, I don't want to pin this entirely on Michael Bay. In part because Alex Kurtzman was a writer and producer on this, and I hate Alex Kurtzman. Because he ruined Star Trek. So I'm going to pin this decision on him, but Michael Bay allowed this to happen. Mm. Is that they made a very strange choice for our protagonist's age, because they're in 11th grade, and like if you look at like the Transformers wiki, like year of the movie, their birth date, they're like 16 or 17 years old, depending on the month. And so like this is kind of a question of like, who is this movie made for? And I think there's answers to that. Like, it's not like this movie wasn't made for anybody. Like we've talked about with like some David Lynch films where it's made for the director. But I feel like when you have a female, when you've got a love interest, for a male protagonist, like a 16 or 17 year old is pretty. A 16 or 17 year old is not hot.
Yeah. Right?
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, it's still skeevy if you bump them up to being seniors and being 18, but like, it's not like legitimately creepy. Like
Was it the second movie where the guy pulls out the "it's legal in Texas" card or whatever?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Oh God, what movie? Or maybe that was a Fast and Furious movie.
I feel like that's Fast and Furious, because second movie, Sam's going to college.
Oh so. Yeah.
Yeah. But just to speak to that, or go ahead, Neil, if you had more. Sorry.
Just that again, like I think that it's a weird choice to have them be that age and then like have like the scene where she's inspecting Bumblebee's engine, and just like, you know, the shots that are involved with that.
The other one I was gonna mention, when there was John Turturro, whatever his agency's called, and he calls her training bra, and then he says criminals are hot, but he's like implying she's hot.
Yeah,
that's very weird.
I did not think about the creepiness of any of that when I was watching the movie. I don't think that like the John Turturro creepiness stuff didn't really, I remember him saying training bra and I just kind of laughed. I didn't really think it was being creepy or whatever, but I guess maybe I'm just not tuned into that sort of thing. But this movie is, for many reasons iconic, like we've already stated, but like just there was a whole generation of boys that were turned into men by watching Raquel Welch in like 10,000 BC back in the mid 60s, right? And just like there was a whole generation of men that were like, many of our dads probably had the same Farrah Fawcett poster. But we're all thinking of this exact same post, right? It's like an iconic image, right? Megan Fox in Transformers is no different. overnight she went from being, you know, basically unknown to being in a bunch of movies that were just about how hot she was, right? Which is not necessarily, you know, that was like the sort of the last relic of that Hollywood where you could just show up in Hollywood and just so smoking hot that you just built a career out of it. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's like greatly diminished in the internet age where like anybody can just get on Instagram and become famous. But the creepiness stuff didn't register with me, but you would be remiss to talk about this movie without talking about the Megan Fox fixing the car scene. I mean, it's like a completely iconic, sexy, and so mid 2000s, like everything about that scene, like the lighting, the clothes, everything. Mm.
There's Linkin Park at the end, man. Yeah.
I played that at my funeral. The movie that brought that meme about. But so on the other hand, you're right, Sam, that the Megan Fox scene is pretty iconic. Mm-hmm. But like this movie is also like strangely kind of like pro-feminist with her. Like, yes, she's hot, but she's also like not it's not that she's useful, is that she like has like agency and makes choices like, oh, I'm gonna stick with Bumblebee and drag him through the streets on this tow truck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She it's not that Sam tells her to do that. It's not that right. Anybody she makes that choice for herself. Mm-hmm. And
she has a character beyond just being there and being hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I do appreciate...
I almost think that her character is more developed than the blonde hacker lady that all I know of is like a blonde. I'm like, I wish I knew her name.
She is Australian for sure. Yeah. That's all I remember about her.
I looked her up. She has an interesting credit. The next year she was in Bottle Shock, which is a movie I want to watch for the podcast at some point. Okay. Gideon and I talked about it.
Oh, is that the Alan Rickman one?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what I wanted to talk about regarding the cast of this movie, regarding where we were just... This is maybe something to talk with at some point. I feel like the black comic relief character is such a thing of a bygone era. Like, when we were watching...
It's the last, like, jive-talking, like... Yeah. Acceptable thing. Nowadays we're just like, black people don't talk like that, and they're also like they are like 20 IQ points dumber than any other character. It's just
even
but that was so common in movies of this era. Like, that was in every summer blockbuster. There are some summer blockbusters that are completely designed around this trope, right? Like Rush Hour is funny because Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan are so far apart from each other, right? Like that's the source of the of a lot of the comedy from that entire franchise, right? And watching this, I was blown away. I was like, oh yeah, we used to do this in movies, and it was just commonplace. And I can't remember the last time I saw that character, like the loud black, fast talking, donut eating,
energetic guy
show up in the movie. It's just like we have done away with it. I can't tell you like an exact year where it was like before and after, but I feel like I haven't seen that in a movie in like 10 years.
And even with, I noticed this too watching it. So the Transformer Jazz, I think he's portrayed as black, and literally one of the things he says is like, "What's up, bitches?" You're like, "Oh my god!" It's like one of the first things he says, and then he also gets ripped in half by Megatron, and it's like, "Oh my god!"
Oh no, the black robot dies first.
Yeah.
Do you know who voices Megatron in this movie?
I do not.
It's Hugo Weaving, aka Elrond.
I did want to. Oh, sorry. I did want to shout out Anthony Anderson, who was the black comic relief character, but he was hilarious. Like, I really liked his whole scene.
Was that the military black comic relief character or the hacker black?
The hacker. Yeah.
I mean, also
grandma. playing DDR.
And don't forget, we also had like a jive-talking Latino guy who's like, oh yeah, that's my culture. I can't do it, the accent or anything, but
yeah, right.
Talking about, that's me mama's recipe. Like, yeah. Oh, cool.
And our podcast just got canceled. Thanks, Lord. But no, I mean, there's even the cameo by Bernie Mac.
Yeah, Bernie Mac.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Too. And Bernie Mac is so funny in that scene. I love when he like points to his mom or grandma over there, and then she like flips him off. So good.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, just that strain of humor in this movie. When I was watching it, I was like, "Oh yeah, we used to do this, and it fell out of fashion at some point, and we just kind of stopped." I forgot about it. And this movie was much more of a time capsule than I was anticipating it in more ways than one.
This movie, like we talked about, who is this for? It feels like it's a movie that was made by a 13-year-old boy for 13-year-old boy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah, like you got the, you know, you're not quite in 11th grade yet, but then you're going to be, and there's going to be sexy ladies like Megan Fox, and man, it'd be cool if I had a transforming badass sports car that shot lasers and shit, and I had to bring this cube to my other robot friend. All this stuff. But
yeah,
wouldn't it be cool
if I had a Camaro and a Strokes t-shirt and a cool girlfriend.
And nothing is more emblematic than that product placement cutaway of like the 360. And you hear it activating, hear the 360 noise.
Yeah, Mountain Dew.
And the fucking Mountain Dew shooting Mountain Dew cans at people. Which was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, another thing to remember is just all like watching old technology, like the height of American military power is just like Windows XP. And also like watching the way movies display hacking is always interesting because they're stealing all our files, and somehow the files are like flashing across the screen. I'm like, I don't think it's that secure if you're just having them come up on the monitor right there.
Yeah, it was. I loved all the military shit in this movie. Neil probably knows that I'm a sucker for air, and like particularly the West Wing. I think the West Wing is like the coolest show ever. So all the scenes where it was just like all the government, especially like John Turturro or John Voight, I was just like in hog heaven with this movie. I thought it was so awesome.
It's interesting how they portray the different branches of the government, because like we said before, yes, this movie is totally sponsored by the U.S. military as like a recruitment tool. And so the U.S. military has this deal that they will lend you their helicopters and tanks and shit if they have final approval of the script. So it's nothing that truly makes them look bad or, you know, like war criminals or whatever. But why does the movie also chooses to make any other government agency like this, like super FBI, super incompetent. And like, it seems to be like simultaneously very anti-government because they're like, oh, those stupid paper pusher guys. Like they just seem so not good at their high security jobs.
Yeah, it's very pro like anybody on the front lines or that has seen combat. Yeah, it's pro meathead, right? Exactly. It's like anybody that's a government, like a pencil pusher, or even if you're like chair force or whatever, like that you get no respect in the country, right? It's just you got to have an M4 and a helmet, or you're not getting any respect, right? There was something this movie just bleeds American patriotism and militarism, especially like mid-2000s flavor of that.
When they're like, bring the rain, and that music plays and the AC-130 shows up, and then fucking Modern Warfare 2 comes out a couple years later, and then you do it. Man.
Yeah.
That shit was awesome.
Yeah, it reminds me of being in high school, and Laura, I'm sure this is going to be like one of those they do what states kind of moments. There was a day of gym class in high school where the fucking military was brought in, and they have like special obstacle courses set up, and like you go through them as teams or whatever, and then they try to corner the kids who are like good at them, and then they're like, you thinking about going that? Because that happened to me.
Hey, like, kid, do you like playing Halo on the Xbox? Yeah. You know what's just like Halo?
Yeah. So just for context, I'm not athletic at all. I have basically the same body as Gumby. But I am good at climbing like rock towers because I'm tall and lanky. So I was the first one to hit the button on the tower. Like, you know, got down the side. I was unhooking my rope and you thinking about going army, son? And I was just like, and walked away. So that was my extent of interaction with the U.S. military. But it is kind of weird in retrospect to be like, oh yeah, there was that weird day where we all got casually propositioned in gym class about joining the U.S. military.
Oh yeah, that flashes to another memory. How you were like, yeah, this movie's pro meathead. Is like, I saw the text on the bottom of the screen that's like Qatar, comma Middle East, and it's like. Oh yeah, movies think we're dumb. Like, did people just not know that Qatar was a country?
Well, it said Qatar, Middle East, and my first impression was like, I know it's the Middle East, dude. Look at all the fucking sand everywhere. Like, where else is there this much sand on the planet Earth? So, I don't know. We have been going for a little bit here. Do we want to... Let's speak now or forever hold your peace. Anybody have any burning topics they need to bring up?
So, I do kind of bring up the cast. So, an interesting thing that IMDb does is that it gives precedence to people who physically appear on the screen. So, if you look on IMDb at, like, top build, basically, like Optimus Prime, Megatron, like all the actual Transformers are at the very bottom, underneath like analyst number 5. But number 1, like, again, Megatron is in like maybe 30 minutes of the movie, and that just seems like a waste of Hugo Weaving. But on our double feature with Rodel Dorado and Sinbad, we had the actor who does Tigger's voice in both of them, and I thought that he was in this, but I was wrong. But Peter Cullen, who voices Optimus Prime and has basically the whole time, like all the way back to the 80s cartoon, is also just the voice of Eeyore and has been for like 50 years. Yeah. Wow.
That's awesome. I didn't know that it was the same cartoon. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, like if you look through his IMDb, it's like Transformers, Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, Transformers, Winnie the Pooh.
And get you a man who can do both.
Yeah, basically.
Got a sensitive side, he's got a leadership side, you know.
The other thing that we didn't bring up is that Steven Spielberg produced this movie.
Oh. Well, what do you know? I didn't know that either. It reeks of such Michael Bayness that it's hard to imagine anybody else.
Can't see anyone else's fingerprints on it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, how about you, Gideon? Any final thoughts? Give it scores.
Just to speak to like some of the kind of funny incompetence of John Turturro's team, whatever they're called, the Secret Idiot Society or whatever. I love how they have John Voight with them, and he's like, "Don't you think you should have told the military you got fucking Megatron on ice up here?" And they're like, "Oh, it didn't pose a danger or whatever." It's like, "Do you see this bitch? Do you see this claws on this guy? Like, what are you talking about? You're just chilling up here while you're working on your dam or whatever the hell you're doing."
Yeah. When the Secretary of Defense was like brought into a room to explain, it was like, "Hey, there's some shit you need to know about." I had a similar thought. I was probably more than just a few people in the military should know about this.
Yeah.
Sorry, Neil.
The one other thing, just from like a screenwriting perspective, that kind of blew me away is like they just like threw a lot of like numbers as far as dates at you and expected you to think it made sense. So like Sam Witwicky Sam Witwicky's great grandfather was an Arctic explorer and like, you know, like using a ship that was powered by the wind. And he finds Megatron, so like 150 years ago. But the cube disappeared from Cybertron and crashed on Earth 10,000 years ago. And the rest of the Decepticons and Autobots are just showing up now. Like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, I think if we start going down the rabbit hole, plot holes in in Michael Bay's Transformers, we're going to be here.
Dude, and plot conveniences. Like, mm-hmm. The hack gets stopped conveniently on the page that they needed. Like, yeah. I feel like
it's all pretty silly.
One other thing.
How about you, Laura? Any burning thoughts?
Yeah, just like don't hate on like the people that invented the thing that eventually becomes annoying. So it does have a lot of things that people, you know, rag on and make jokes about. But
like what? Like you mean like cinema, like?
Like the teal and orange skin, that's something. Yeah. And then also the fast and slow action shots where it's like a bunch of stuff. And then it's like, and you get into like the super slow-mo time. And then it like goes back to normal speed. Like that's something that was really overused. And then people watch like the John Wick films and they're like, oh yeah, action shots used to just be at normal speed.
Yeah, I think, so what you're saying is, these things were effectively used in this movie, and
yeah, like there's a reason this movie became a gangbusters amount of film and made it just printed money. Mm-hmm. And then other filmmakers, probably of like just lesser caliber and confidence, used them less effectively, and it just got annoying. So,
yeah, I would agree with that. It's like the Wachowskis' Bullet Time, and Bullet Time kicks so much ass in The Matrix and every other movie. This is a much super game, so I.
Like, it doesn't make sense when they do that kind of thing in medieval movies. Like, you don't need...
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. Like, one of the things we talked about with Bone Tomahawk, it was awesome how quickly everybody died in that movie. It was like one wrong step and it was just boom and you were just done. Like, one gunshot and it was over. The deaths were quick in that movie until they weren't. You know, that's kind of how we described it at the time. So, I'm ready to give my score.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and give it a 4. I think that might be surprising. You know, we've had a lot of minor nitpicks and criticisms, but at the end of the day, I think exactly that. They're minor nitpicks and criticisms of what is ostensibly, like, Michael Bay has a great shield against criticism with his movies, which is, I make movies for 13-year-old boys. So if the plot doesn't make sense, it's, who fucking cares? You know, I still saw Autobots fight in Decepticon. Had a great, things were set up effectively and things had stakes and I cared about the characters. And, you know, it's like the perfect kind of summer blockbuster kind of movie. It's not something that is like pulling at my heartstrings and I'm taking something deeper and more artistic away from, which is to me almost what necessitated 5. And I also don't think that it reaches, you know, every movie I think has to be compared against movies that are similar to it. There's no point in comparing Transformers to Taxi Driver, right? But I would say the best movie in this genre that I've seen is Pacific Rim. So I don't think Transformers is as good as Pacific Rim, but I think it's like maybe 80% of the way. It's 70 or 80% of the same of the way there. So, you know, I think a 4 is like totally appropriate. I had a fun time. I ate some popcorn. Grace and I cranked up the volume. It was, you know, we had a good time. So, anybody else?
I can go next. Yeah. It's like, you know, kind of thinking on it, it's almost like between a 3 and a 4 for me, but I think I would lean towards the 4. And obviously, this probably is one of the most nostalgic movies in my life. But I haven't seen it a lot in, you know, many, many years. It just kind of like started like a real interest for me, I feel like, in like, you know, special effects, visual effects, awesome sound design. Mm-hmm. I've always liked robots, you know, and I've been a fan of Transformers since I was a kid. And it's just like a thoroughly entertaining, like fun, turn your brain off, like comfort watch for me. So I think I would give it a 4. It's just mainly just purely entertainment value for me. Just really, really fun. And I don't, even though, you know, it is a little longer, but I don't really mind because it's doing that big summer blockbuster. And this, for me, probably is one of the poster child when I think of a summer blockbuster movie. Yeah, it's just a lot of fun. I don't know. It's just silly and stupid and just dumb fun.
Yeah, we got to have room for silly and stupid. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Laura, how about you?
Yeah, like you said, this movie, it was made to sell $15 buckets of popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
And one final note that I forgot to say is that we were talking about Shia LaBeouf's frenetic energy. He's a very good actor that can sell a very stupid premise. Like, mm-hmm. The premise is alien robots, oh my god, but that's ridiculous, right? But it's real and it's happening. And I'm like, yeah, I believe it from you.
I found his eBay page.
Yeah. Sponsored by eBay. No, it was good. Like the others have said, it is it's not that deep. It's a fun crash 'em up movie. There again, if you are a minority person, there is, you know, some elements of very early 2000s sexism and racism there.
Oh yeah.
But it doesn't it doesn't make the movie like an unwatchable. It's just a little bit, it's like, ah, cringe, you know.
And
like
also
that
not
SNL,
more so than other movies of the time, right?
Yeah,
it's like that SNL parade of like all the shit we used to do, kind of.
right.
But yeah, so I'm gonna give it a 3 just because, like, again, I'm not a Transformers person and I totally respect those who are like lifers, but it's still like, it's fun and you will eat popcorn and you will turn your brain off and smashy smashy robots.
All right, and last but certainly not least, hour. Neil, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I think for a while I was toying with giving it a 2 or a 4. like 2 if I was going to be more like hoity-toity about, like, yeah, there's some issues with it and XYZ, but really, I enjoyed it. I had fun with it, and I think it's a 3. Like, it's not. It's again, like Sam, you brought up Pacific Rim, and maybe I need to rewatch that to do a true comparison. But I feel like in my head, Pacific Rim is a 4,
mm-hmm.
and so I've got to give Transformers a 3.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I think. I think the 2 would probably go to Revenge of the Fallen because that's the one where it starts to get really offensive to people.
Off the rails. Yeah.
Well, do we decide who is going to... Laura, did you give a score?
Yeah, I gave it a 3.
Mm. 3. Okay, so we got 2 3s and 2 4s.
I do have one last thing I want to shout out about TGI. Man, I mean, this thing's almost 20 years old, and I feel like it doesn't feel that age.
Yeah, still
looks
pretty.
I felt like it held up pretty strong. There's a few times when you see them in like the light, looks that you can see kind of the fakeness peeking out. But there was a particular shot with Megatron where he jumps off a building and he like tumbles and then turns into a jet. And I'm like, it has so much momentum and like power in that shot, and it still kind of like blows my mind. I'm like, this shit is still pretty cool. Just like seeing all that. So I just wanted to mention that. Yeah.
Also, shout out to older movies that are available to rent in 4K with HDR and Dolby Atmos. Shout out to, I love when they go back and they like, they've taken every movie in a franchise and just upgraded all of it, and you can just, you rent it and you just get all of it. That's nice.
Yeah.
Big shout out to that. Did you watch this on physical or are you renting?
No, so that's what I was going to say. Shout out to streaming services like Paramount Plus that don't lock 4K behind some bullshit tier like Netflix.
Yeah, that's
so. Yeah, 4K, Dolby Atmos, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Stream looked great and everything. So yeah, I watched it that way.
Awesome. Well, who's up for next week? I think that was Transformers Neil's pick.
I think it was me or Laura. I do have a pick ready if Laura doesn't.
I have two choices for you guys if you are feeling it. One is a girly movie, one is a political movie. Would you rather watch Marie Antoinette or The Iron Skies, which is about President Sarah Palin and moon Nazis?
Is the movie just called Marie Antoinette?
Yeah, it's just called 2006 Marie Antoinette.
Okay.
With Kirsten Dunst, right?
Yeah. The thing about Marie Antoinette is that it has a ton of actors before they were famous. I don't want to spoil it, but you'll watch it and be like, he was in this movie? And you're like, yeah, and that happens like 8 more times.
Who picked another round?
That was me.
Yeah.
So then it would be Laura's pick. So Laura, I would vote for Marie Antoinette, but I'm willing to concede.
I also
to
you. Would, yeah. But you can pick whatever you want.
No, if you guys all want to watch Marie Antoinette, let's do it.
What do you think, Neil?
I'm more in favor of Marie Antoinette because I've seen Iron Sky and.
Okay.
And Marie Antoinette is Sofia Coppola, right?
Yep.
Okay. I'm in. Sofia Coppola is a phenomenal director, so I'm in for that.
And it's also very early 2000s. So we're going from 2007 to 2006. So we're just like, the economy's booming. You know, we're all in high school.
Fine. Next up, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Let's do it.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
And then Iron Man 1.
Yeah, dude. Okay, well, you know, I saw Iron Man 1 for the first time maybe 3 years ago. Because I just missed out on all. I just missed out on the whole Marvel thing. I was being a douchebag about it, but yeah, it was pretty awesome, and of course Robert Downey Jr. is great in that movie. I mean, what can you say? Also, Jeff Bridges, awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we'll see you guys next week for Marie Antoinette. I will get this uploaded as well as I didn't the last week's, but I have it. I didn't lose it, but I haven't uploaded it yet because you know Sephiroth isn't going to kill himself. So I'll see you guys next week. Do cool. Some Mary Antoinette business. I might be at a hockey game next week. Let me check my schedule. But we'll figure all that out in the chat. I'll see you guys later.
Mm-hmm. See ya.
Take care, everybody.
Peace out, guys.
Later. Bye.